Well, good morning and welcome to the Wayne Eddy Affair on your radio station. We're the one, 95.1 FM. And, of course, for over 50 Christmases, we are 1080 on your AM dial from downtown Northfield, Minnesota, the home of the famous Winter Walk. Oh, yeah, a little bit of sun out there. 1 week from Christmas. Next week at this time will be Christmas Day, and it's so, so nice to hear about Christmas through the eyes of a child. That started well over a quarter of a century ago from St. Dominic's School. And thank you to Bob Winter and all the other folks that sponsor that show, including my friend Dick Simon. So let's get on with our interview this morning. I've been looking forward to this. My guest this morning drove up from Rochester, Minnesota, the home of the Mayo Clinic and other great things. And her name is, I got to pronounce this right, Sarah Amadon. Did I say it right?
You did.
All right. Miss Sarah Amadon is my guest. And Sarah, I introduced you to John, who was just on with Jeff Johnson, the city administrator for Dundas, and you started chatting, and there's some connection there.
He knows my uncle Jimmy Amadon, who was a well-known hockey player and from around the Midwest, and now he's retired out in Montana, but he was kind of an infamous character, and in my mind, he's not a very, you know, really tall man, but he was, I think, known as quite an enforcer, or at least kind of a beast on the ice.
So. And what teams did he play for? Any
we'd
be familiar with?
Oh, goodness. I am going to forget. I want to say he played partially in Colorado. I know he went international and played overseas for a while, and he decided to leave and not go pro and instead became a teacher.
A teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And I suppose with his experience in hockey, he knew how to take care of students.
Yes.
Except nowadays, you can't do that, of course. You can't be intimidating. I heard a story that a teacher was fired, and it seems to me it was out west someplace, or east, excuse me. And the teacher had referred, there was the way I understand it, there was a student who preferred to be a she or a he rather than a she. And you can get in trouble with your pronouns nowadays. And he was not in the class. And his name was like it could be Stephanie or Stephen. And he used a proper a male pronoun. And when she was not in class, he was talking about what a good job she had done in school and said she did very well on her test. And they're suing the school district. No, he got fired. He got fired for saying she got good marks on her test or whatever it was instead of he.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah.
Difficult.
Where?
Yeah, yeah.
But anyhow, this is not about that stuff. It's about you, and I want to introduce you, ladies and gentlemen, our guest Sarah Amadon up from Rochester, and I was introduced to you by Brandon Sampson, a good friend of mine, and also my prosthetist.
Yep.
And by the way, have you ever tried to use the microphone on your smartphone and say, I will be late, I'm at my prosthetist?
No. But I know spell check has a hard time.
It says, I am going to be late. I'm at the prostitute.
Yep. I could imagine, yes.
And it took me a while. Finally, I had to use my hands because my hands were all screwed up and I don't like to do the typing. But anyhow, how long have you been with Limb Lab in Rochester?
A little over a year. I started as a resident in, I think, very end of September of 2017. And I came from a facility up in the Twin Cities that I had done another residency at, and came down here to do, we have two residencies. I finished my prosthetic residency in Minneapolis and came down to Limb Lab to do my year-long orthotic residency. And that ended in September of this year, and then I'm lucky enough that they wanted me to stay on, and so I am there now. So it's
well,
wonderful.
The first prosthetist that I had on here was Brandon, and I was really taken aback at how much education is required to be certified or licensed or whatever the terminology is.
Yes.
It took me aback. It's more than an MD. And I'm going, holy cow, why don't you guys get a title of doctor? I teasingly call Brandon doctor. But when he introduced us, he said, you know, you should have her on the air. She's a mountain climber? Is that what he said?
I have a previous career as a marine biologist.
That's what it was. I'm sorry. I told Jeff Johnson, whom you just met, that you were a mountain climber. And you're a marine biologist. Mm-hmm. Just the opposite, I guess. And that's what piqued my interest about, you know, a woman that has changed her career life mm-hmm. path in not diabolically, but really different from
yes.
each other, marine biology to being a prosthetist. And by the way, I am a big fan of nature shows mm-hmm. and marine biology. Mm-hmm. It just amazes me how intelligent some fish
yes.
are. Just unbelievable.
Yep.
And particularly the octopus. And they can train octopus.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going, wow, how do they do that? But I learned when I watched the TV special. But I enjoy those movies all about the Amazon, all about Brazil, or all mm-hmm. about Galapagos. What are they called?
Galapagos.
Yeah. Yep. And so anyhow, that's going to be an interesting part, too. It's 10 minutes after 9 o'clock on the Wayne Eddy Affair. Once again, my guest this morning is Sarah Amadon. I'm saying that right?
Yep.
And what I want to do is, first of all, talk about a little bit about your career so far. It's not even a year old mm-hmm. after you've been licensed, etc. And then I want to start with where were you born and bring you all the way through to today.
Gotcha.
We can do that.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to be very loquacious and garrulous. All right?
Mm-hmm.
All right. No single syllable responses.
Okay. Will do.
Will do. Okay. So first of all, how did you make the decision after studying marine biology to move into the situation that you're in right now, which is helping those individuals who lose an arm, a leg, a hand, an ankle, whatever?
It's a pretty wild transition.
It
does not easily flow from one to the other, except that they're both at least science-based. So I went to college out in Washington State.
And we'll talk about that yep. later as we go chronologically
gotcha.
Through your life.
And then when I eventually moved back to the Twin Cities and was kind of feeling that need, obviously being away from the ocean, kind of figuring maybe now it's time to change careers. And I don't have a family member or anybody in my life that had been an amputee or had experience with that, but I was watching the Paralympics one day on TV, and I said, man, I've always been an athlete myself. I'd love to work with athletes. I'm very inspired by these people that are overcoming their individual challenges. How do I get to work with them? I had some injuries in my kind of previous career and in my athletic life and had a lot of physical therapy. I said I really loved working with the human body and the kinesiology and everything that they're kind of working on with the biomechanics of the body. And so I was somewhat drawn to that, but I also loved working with my hands. I liked building things. That made sense to me. I didn't have a background in that, but it always kind of, those things clicked. I can put IKEA furniture together really pretty well.
You got me beat.
So I was looking around, what can I do that does both of these things? I had a family friend who worked for a company up in St. Paul, and he was a orthotic technician. So I went and shadowed with him one day, and I said, okay, and yeah, this is intriguing. We just happen to have a school in the Twin Cities for this. There's very few programs around the country, so that kind of seemed like a sign, and I just started going towards it and a little left my kind of previous career and started into the prosthetic orthotic field and just made my way through school.
All right. Now, one of the things you said was you were from the Twin Cities.
Mm-hmm.
What city are you from?
I'm from Minneapolis, South Minneapolis.
Okay. Well, I'm a St. Paulite. Mm-hmm. Where is the school that you shadowed that guy in St. Paul? Where is that located?
Oh, the facility. He's retired now, but he worked at one of the Fairview clinics over on, I want to say it's on University, but I'm Creighton. It's right around that area.
Okay.
So I shadowed him for the day, and then the Century College has the technician and kind of the first half of our educational program, and that's out in White Bear Lake.
Yeah, it's on 52, is it, or 490? I know, I drive by it all. Oh, it's on 494, which turns into 694.
Yeah, way out in 694.
And south by White Bear Lake and by Maplewood.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a friend that you take a right where the Century College is, and then you go to the right for two or three or four or five blocks. I always miss it. And so I know the area real well, and I grew up in St. Paul, and all that's brand new to me. It's amazing. Once again, on the Wayne Eddy Affair, Sarah Amidon is my guest, and she is going to tell us all about her athletic career and about marine biology. I love that stuff, but we're a week away from Christmas, so we're going to be passing along some information in regards to what you can do in regards to the holidays. And, of course, we appreciate your listening to Kim. We are The One, 95.1.
Residential or commercial, Cannon Valley Water in Dundas is the place to call for water. Whether it's a complete water conditioning system or just salt delivery and filters, Cannon Valley Water can take care of it. And Cannon Valley Water can also deliver Candy Yohai premium water right to your house or business at great rates, too. Chippewa Springs is as pure today as it was when we first tested it over a century ago, and is proudly distributed by Cannon Valley Water. Pickups are now located at 609 Stafford Lane in Dundas, just behind Aldi. Call Cannon Valley for your water today.
You buy something because you got it for a low price, and soon you realize it's no bargain because you really needed something better. It happens all the time, especially with car insurance. But the good news is you can get the right coverage at the right price. Just talk to me, State Farm Agent Mark Quinnell. I'll help you get the right coverage at a price that's right for you. Call me at 645-4545 today.
Like a good neighbor, State Farm is.
Providing insurance and financial services.
You got a big smile on your face. Should I turn it down?
I love the song.
Should I turn it down, or is it vulgar?
I'm trying to remember. Might be a little bit.
Okay, I'll love that. It's not radio edited, so it's. Do you know the name of the song?
Yes, if I wasn't under pressure, I know it's from the movie Dangerous Minds, Coolio.
Yep, it's Coolio. And it's not Dangerous Minds.
That was the movie he was in, but.
Oh, it's Gangsta's.
Gangsta Paradise.
Yeah, okay. That was the number one song in your junior year in high school.
Yes.
What high school did you go to?
I went to South High School.
Oh, okay. I know where that is. A lot of listeners know where that is. And, of course, the most famous person that went to South High School is who?
Well, I'm guessing you're going to say Josh Hartnett.
Who?
Josh Hartnett was in my class.
Oh.
That was who was famous.
Who's
to
he?
Me. He's an actor.
Oh.
Who are you thinking of?
I was thinking, was it Roosevelt or South that Jesse Ventura went to?
Oh, Roosevelt.
Roosevelt, okay. Yep. Never mind.
That's okay.
17 past 9 on KYMN Radio. My guest this morning is a woman by the name of Sarah Amidon. And Sarah, first of all, I've asked a lot of people, where were you born? And they say, well, in Duluth. And I said, oh, you're from Duluth. No, I'm from Two Harbors. So it doesn't matter where you're born. It's where were you raised?
Well, I was born and raised in South Minneapolis.
Okay. And what neighborhood? Well, I'm trying to think. Are we talking about around the lake or around
I was south of south of Lake Harriet, kind of right on the border of Edina, right on Minnehaha Creek.
Oh.
And we were a small little street. It wasn't a quick travel through route for anybody, but right on Minnehaha Creek, had a wonderful house there, woods behind me, although we were in the middle of the city. And I went to Claire Barton Open School for kindergarten through eighth grade.
What was that like?
It's an open program, and I think it was pretty modern in the time. I know my elementary school experience was different than a lot of my friends. We didn't have desks, called my teachers by their first name. We did a lot of time sitting in the circle, even through sixth grade. And then junior high was probably not all that traditional, but I had a wonderful experience. I had a wonderful education there, and then...
That's Clara Barton?
Yeah. Mostly goes by Barton. But Barton.
Did
Clara
you have
Barton.
To wear a uniform?
No.
Okay.
No.
Well, is there tuition, obviously?
No.
No?
No, public school.
Well, how did that work out? Were you like an artist or had an ability to look at fish and figure them out? How did you get into it? Sounds like it. You have to get in.
It's still, I mean, it's a public school, but I know, I've only learned this in my later years, that I know that there is quite a waiting list to get in. My brother was already going there, but it is one of the main kind of elementary schools in that neighborhood, so there's no tuition, not private anyway, but I guess highly sought after, and I believe it still is. I have some friends of my age whose children go there now, and it's, you know, when you get, you kind of enter almost a lottery system, I believe.
Okay. Do you have to test out to get in?
Nope.
Oh.
No.
So you
no special requirements.
Yeah, so you could have graduated from there and put your name on the list to send your children there if people do that.
They do. I know it's still quite tough to get in because there's a lot of excitement if you do get your children in there.
Now, you mentioned your older brother. How many siblings do you have?
One older brother. He's 3 years older.
And what's his name?
Aaron.
Aaron, okay. And Aaron, I'll write that down. 3 years older, your big brother.
Yes.
And so you got to see him in class for a while before you took off for South High School.
Yes, he was at, we went to elementary school together and then went to high school together. He was a senior and I was a freshman and he drove me to school every day and I had to listen to whatever his music was. And he was a pretty popular guy in school and had a lot of friends and they would kindly harass me on a pretty regular basis.
Oh, yeah, the little sister.
the little sister.
The good-looking little sister.
With the red hair.
And the freckles.
Yes. I had wild, very long, very curly hair at that point. So I was an easy target.
No, he was a jock?
Yes, he was. He was a good athlete. He was a wrestler. I guess I would say that was his main sport. But he played hockey when he was younger. He played baseball. He did kind of the normal stuff. But then went into wrestling and judo. We had a pretty athletic father, and so my brother and I managed to find sports that he knew nothing about so that he couldn't continually attempt to coach us.
Oh,
that was our strategy.
What did your parents do?
My father still worked. My mother's retired. She was a nurse practitioner, and then she eventually went into kind of the worked for this. I want to say worked for Hennepin County, but worked for the state. She ran, there's something in the high schools, the public high schools in Minneapolis called mini clinics. And she ran those for the city of Minneapolis. And then my father has, there's a family business, not him directly, but his cousins have a printing business in St. Paul called Amazon Graphics.
And where's that at?
They are just below West 7th, pretty close to the river. So not in downtown. They're closer to Fort Snelling,
where the old Fort Bland used to be in that area? Or?
They're near Highland Park.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. The Ford Bridge and Highland Park area, and of course, beautiful River Drive.
Yeah.
Do you ever run?
That's where they live. That's where they live now. They have an apartment right on River Road there.
Oh, I'll bet you that's where Barb Carlson had a place.
It's this famous tall, it's like the one tall high-rise that I think Dear Abby, that's the building.
You don't know who Barb Carlson is. She was Arnie Carlson, former governor's wife.
Yes.
And she had her own radio show on KSTP.
Okay.
And she was doing things before people started talking about things on a regular basis. Okay. She was way out there. And I won't tell you some of the things she asked her guests and stuff, but that's where she lived, same place. So when you went off to South High School, did you enter as the little sister? And as you said, the boys would tease you. What about your girlfriends? Were they trying to hook up with your brother?
Not my brother. Oh, goodness. I had a very good core group of girlfriends that I went from elementary to high school with. We were extremely close. And I believe there was a little flirting from some of my girlfriends to some of my brother's friends, but never my brother.
No. So. Okay. By the way, if you just tuned in, our guest this morning is Sarah Amidon, and she was marine biologist, and then she decided to switch careers, and now she is a prosthetist. I like to teach kids. I go to the prosthetist's office to have a prosthesis made by the prosthetic experts. Did I get those all right?
Yeah.
Okay. So now you're into high school. Now, mm-hmm. what type of sports were you involved in high school?
Swimming. I started swimming for South when I was in eighth grade, which kind of was, my brother was already going to that high school, and my elementary junior high was a natural feed for that school, but because I'd always, you know, was already participating athletically with them, it was a pretty easy transition to go to high school there too.
And you kept your long hair?
I did.
Well, didn't the coach say, hey, you got to cut down on all body hair so
you
can
win? We had swimming caps. It was a big, yeah. Yes, it was a lot of work to stuff it up into a cap. There was okay. a big knob on the back of my head.
How did you do? How did you fare?
I was good, not great.
Okay.
I will say.
What were you specializing in?
Butterfly.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Gulp.
Yeah.
Gulp. Yes. I always like to see those pictures of doing the butterfly with the little tiny goggles on.
Yes.
And, you know, like the guy that won all those medals. The
Michael Phelps.
Yeah, all the muscular, the big chest and all that. And I think, wow, I remember I liked swimming, and I've tried it, and it's painful. I mean, you have to be committed.
It is a challenging stroke. It's an exhausting stroke, yeah.
Which of the all of the various competitions you can be involved in, which one? Okay, so how did you do in that?
I was good. I was a very hard worker, but I was not a state swimmer. I mean, okay. We definitely had people on our team that were far better than I was. But I was, you know, I was always tried to be kind of first in the pool, last out of the pool, and I think I'm kind of the person, I always see what I should be doing. I know what I should be doing. Maybe I should have been a coach, but my body just doesn't necessarily produce the action. So,
was there another competition that you enjoyed more than the one you were competing in?
No, that was definitely always,
okay.
always my love.
Did it help in your eventual career as a marine biologist?
Yes, it did.
Okay, absolutely. And we'll get to that, too. So you get through South High School. You graduated in 1996.
Yep.
Wow, you had your 10-year class reunion a couple years ago, huh?
I did.
Okay. I always have felt that the 10-year class reunion is probably the most uncomfortable and fun. And then after that, you know, everybody settles down and understands that you lose hair, get fat, or whatever. How about your 10-year class reunion? Did you go?
I did not go. I was not living. I was living on the West Coast at the time, so okay. I did not go to it.
Were you a class president or class officer?
Nope.
What other things did you do besides study and swim in high school?
I did more sports, but it was just to keep me in shape for swimming. I was a cross-country skier through the winter, and I did track in the summer, I was not a fast runner. I did shot put and discus, and it was really more just keeping, you know, lifting weights, staying strong for the next swim season.
Did that ever intimidate any guys?
It may have. I've always been the girl next door, the little sister, so I was very unaware of any of that probably at that time when I was in high school.
Did you ever do cross country, not on skis, but regular cross country?
No, I was not. I've never been a great runner. I'm an asthmatic, and running is not my best sport by any means. I still run for work, for exercise now, but that is not a natural sport for me.
Did you ever come to Northfield to compete in anything? Because they hold a lot of high school competitions here.
We just stayed in the city. I never traveled around for that.
Had you ever heard of Northfield?
When I was in high school, probably not, but one of my very close high school friends went to Carleton.
Oh, okay. So. Pretty sharp individual.
She is.
And this is Carleton's part of Carleton's campus.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and they just took over this building about 2 years ago. And so we are looking out the window across the street to the Northfield Carnegie Library. How do you say that? You say Carnegie or Carnegie?
Oh, Carnegie.
Well, I was watching a special about Carnegie, and they talked about the way they pronounce his name. And after they talked about Carnegie and Carnegie, the rest of the information was Carnegie.
Interesting.
That's what I thought.
Carnegie.
I was a Carnegie guy. He was quite a nice man. He built thousands of libraries around the United States. Isn't that nice?
Yeah.
It's 929 on 1080 KYMN. We'll be right back with our guest. Her name is Sarah Abaddon.
Family Fare, Northfield's downtown grocery store, is ready for your holiday guests. Boneless Baranoff beef roast at just $6.99 per pound. Leg of lamb is only $5.49 per pound. Family Fare is stocked with fresh seafood for holiday appetizers, fresh pies for dessert, and Ready Whip is just two for $4. Stop in, grab the weekly ad, get a Starbucks, get what you need, and be on your way in minutes. Family Fare, your local neighborhood market that provides real values for real people in real communities.
The Rare Pair is a unique clothing store that provides comfortable shoes, clothing, and accessories for men and women. A store with high-quality brands and customer service. Now, through December 18th, The Rare Pair has 20% off boots, shoes, and slippers for men and women. In your favorite brands like Sorel, Keen, Dansko, Clarks, and Minnetonka Moccasin. Open until 8 through the holidays, The Rare Pair, located in the heart of downtown Northfield, has the lasting gifts of warmth and comfort.
Head to downtown Northfield and support your local hometown jeweler. It's Craig Jenkins, owner of Jenkins Jewelers. Craig has the perfect gift just waiting for you to finish up your holiday shopping. Whether it's diamonds or precious gems for her, a watch for him, or an engagement ring to give that special someone a Christmas they will never forget, they have a wonderful selection for you to choose from. So head to downtown Northfield today and stop by Jenkins Jewelers and find that special gift for that special someone in your life.
Big smile again. Name that tune.
Chasing Waterfalls, TLC.
Yep, yeah, you got it. Any swear words in this one?
Nope.
Oh.
I don't think so.
Once again, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Wayne Eddy Affair on this, the week before Christmas Day in the city of Northfield, Minnesota. My guest this morning is a prosthetist from Rochester, grew up in Minneapolis, and was a marine biologist before she hopped onto this particular career path, and now she's all licensed. And is that what you say, licensed, or is there another word to use?
Well, certified. I'm a certified prosthetist, and Minnesota is newly a licensure state, so I am also a licensed prosthetist as well. And I'm getting ready to take my final exams for my orthotic side of the field, so I will also be a, knock on wood, a certified orthotist
and
quite
soon. That's the people that make the equipment that we wear.
That's the any bracing system.
Okay.
So prosthetist deals with amputees, anybody that's lost a limb, whether it's a finger or a leg. An orthotist works with bracing and supporting limbs,
okay,
which is almost a wider berth of patients. Spinal cord injury, cerebral palsy, your basic foot orthotics. It's a stroke victims. It's a huge berth of diagnoses that we see out there.
Is that the one that the Vikings have in their practice area? Their campus up there, the TCO, I think it's called?
Twin Cities Orthopedics.
Yeah, the same, similar.
They have a prosthetic and orthotic kind of facility associated with them as well, I believe.
Okay. You like Rochester?
I do. I'm learning to like. I mean, I haven't been down here that long, but yes, I'm slowly learning the city.
When you graduated from South High School, had you already taken your tests and ready to rock and roll in regards to college?
I had. I went straight to school, straight to college.
Where?
Western Washington University. It's about an hour and 15 minutes north of Seattle, right on the, on Puget Sound. I still stay on the coast, but on Puget Sound, and probably about 20 or 30 minutes south of the Canadian border.
I, really?
Yes.
Okay. I caught this is a story pops in my mind. I was fishing with a guy in the Sound, and I pulled up a fish that had not scales. What do you call that when they're just smooth, like a catfish smooth?
Mm, yes.
Okay, and it was orange with black dots.
Okay.
And it was about I would say maybe foot and a half, 2 feet tall, or lengthwise. And I finally saw one on one of those nature shows. He didn't know what it was. I didn't know what it was. All I know is that I've never seen a fish like that before. But I saw one on a nature show and said, oh, that's what that is. Of course, I'm not going to be able to tell you what it was, but that's my experience. Was it hard to get into that school? Because it seems like something that a lot of young people want to do is be involved with nature or the sea. You must have to pass a test of some sort to be able to take up some space in their educational buildings and dorms, etc.
It was definitely a science-oriented school, but more kind of traditional biology, chemistry. I mean, at the end of high school, your SATs, your ACTs, you had to score moderately well on that. That school was definitely looking for a well-rounded individual, so having some athletic background, I had done some volunteering for different Habitat for Humanity, other, just kind of a few different things I'd done back in high school. Mm-hmm. So I think I kind of presented somewhat of a full package to them. So.
And that's what they're looking for.
Yes.
Now, your brother drove you to school, okay? But do you remember your first bicycle that was yours and yours alone?
I do. It took me a long time to learn to ride a bike. I was probably the last kid in my neighborhood to learn to ride, but it was a banana yellow color and had one of those big long banana seats with some streamers on the handles, and yes,
and you'll never forget
no,
that. But you don't think about it very often.
No, not it. It's been a while.
When what were the restrictions in regards to cars at the college that you went to out there in the West?
Restrictions?
Yeah, well, like Carleton and St. Olaf do not allow cars for freshmen and sophomore. I think.
I know what you mean. Goodness, we did not have any restrictions, if I remember correctly. I didn't have a car until I was a junior, but I definitely had classmates that had cars freshman year, and so everybody kind of piled in to one
result. Did you live on campus?
I did for my freshman and sophomore year.
Did you like that?
I did. I had, especially my sophomore year, we were in kind of a unique dorm situation that was almost a little more independent, and it was a mixture of it was co-ed, so we had a pretty good time.
Did they? That sounds about when I first came to town, one of the buildings on the Carleton campus was for women, and the other one were for men. And then they transitioned into one floor men, one floor women. And then they transitioned into men and women on the same floors using the same public bathrooms.
Hmm.
Was that like that there where your dorm was?
We actually had like in our own apartments. So it was two rooms would share one bathroom. So it was definitely still split up. So it was females and then males, but it was each half floor was female or male. So I had one, five steps up to I'd walk out my door directly to the outside and five steps up, was the guy's floor. And then,
well, now, you would have been there during the seasons that are probably the least enjoyable. Were you able to then hook on to a job during the summertime?
I came back to the Twin Cities from, I want to say, all of my summers. I was a camp counselor for about 6 years at a Y camp out west of Minneapolis, and I would come home every summer to
What was the name of that?
Camp Itahoppi.
Say it again?
Itahoppi. Itahoppi.
Okay. I'm familiar with one out west, but that doesn't sound like it. So when you took off, was Mom and Dad worried that you're across the continent by yourself?
I would say they were a little worried at first. They both graduated from Gustavus and thought I should probably go to Gustavus. But I knew before I went out to school, I knew I wanted to do marine biology. I knew I wanted to be on an ocean, and we had traveled a lot to the West Coast growing up, and I have an aunt and uncle that lived just south of Vancouver. So they were in that neck of the woods by that university I went to. So I think that put them much more at ease, and me, because I was going out there without any friends. So I knew I had family close by, and I spent a lot of time with them.
Was it an easy experience, or did you have to wait a couple of weeks before you felt comfortable?
It was pretty easy. I did not have significant, I wasn't really homesick. And I think that probably helped from being a camp counselor for those many summers. I lived out at that camp all summer and just saw my parents on the weekends, maybe. So I was used to being on my own kind of gradually. I didn't have a difficult time transitioning in that sense. It was still obviously eye-opening, and going out there again without any friends took a little while. But I joined the rugby team, and that was where I met my closest friends that are still some of my greatest friends.
So when did they start getting into marine biology? What were your requirements when you first got there? What courses lead up to getting a degree in marine biology?
Well, I had to take the basics. I mean, there was, of course, all the general requirements, the whole span of education. But then there was a basic chemistry and biology series. Now, I kind of had a long college experience. I didn't quite figure out exactly what direction I wanted to go. They had a college within the university that was more of an environmental studies college. And I didn't figure out I wanted to go that direction until my junior year. I was getting kind of lost in the really huge biology classes, and I was struggling somewhat and was diagnosed with a learning disability and just was not quite finding my way and realized I really needed a smaller class scenario, a little more intimate education scenario. And the college within my university was kind of the direction I finally went, but I had to do a whole nother year of specific science requirements to get into that college, and I luckily got in on my first application round, and then that was two more years of education once I was in there. So I didn't graduate in 4 years. It took me a couple more.
Well, that's
normal.
That's not unusual.
Yeah.
And it's kind of a good experience, too. You found your way while you were there and were able to pursue it from there. But what were some of the things that you did before you got into the college at the university in regards to math and biology and chemistry? Did you ever say to yourself, well, I need this? Or, like, who's ever going to sit down and figure out whatever Einstein figured out?
Math was definitely the biggest struggle, and I had to go pretty far with math, and that was always difficult, and that kind of made me question, do I really want to do this? The biology, even though I was, like I said, I was feeling kind of lost in my large classes, I knew that I loved it. And even with my learning disability, once that was diagnosed and I finally was getting kind of the help to kind of help me learn how to study better, I think because it was such a challenge, and unfortunately my learning disability mostly affected my science and mathematical skills, so it was an uphill climb, and I had one advisor who basically told me not to do this, and I kept going anyway, and then I found another advisor who said, well, obviously, this is what you want more than anything, so let's help you figure out how to do this, and that was a big change for me. Was that individual person who kind of linked me up with some of the services on campus that I needed to help me kind of progress.
Well, there are probably a lot of people that can, relate to your story in that regard. Coming from maybe very successful, intelligent, highly motivated parents or grandparents, and those genes didn't come down in regards to being to comprehend things immediately, et cetera. So do you think that your participation as a volunteer, as a swimmer, and as a track and field participant, you were using that as a tool to get along in society and accomplish something because you struggled with some parts of math, et cetera?
Probably. I had to be a hard worker. It took me, I will admit, my first couple of years of college, I was not working nearly as hard as I was having a very good time. And like I said, I was on the rugby team and was very social, and we got to travel a lot for that. But yes, when it came down to it, I don't know if I recognized it in myself, but I have been told many times by my family members and people around me that I did work very hard and was very persistent and wasn't going to take no for an answer, and just kind of, I wasn't aware that I was doing that at the time. But I guess that is what I was doing, because I just kept pushing forward until I finally got the answers that I needed and finally made my way through it. And again, found that kind of college within my university that was very much more geared to my type of learning, and then I really flourished.
What would, is there a name for the learning disability?
No, it's just a lack of analytical skill. So, for example, when you get presented with a math problem in class, they give you the instructions of how to do that math problem. But then when you do your homework or you do the test, it's never going to be that exact math problem. It's going to be one step above that. So can you take what you learned in class and apply it? And I couldn't apply. I had a hard time making that jump. But as we all have, if we are lacking in one area, we are exceptional in another area. And I was off the charts, not to brag, but I was literally off the charts in my spatial awareness skills, which of course has come into play in my newer career. That didn't necessarily apply so much at that time, but at least I knew I wasn't just lacking in general. I just had to learn how to use my spatial skills and study in a very specific way. Stand up. I had to use huge whiteboards and really physically draw out my problems so that my body got involved in the learning process versus just reading the book and memorizing.
I had a similar situation in high school, and where I thought I was special because they had me join a group of individuals at the academy and get more instructions in algebra and geometry. And I thought, wow. It was just the opposite. They weren't there because I was exceptional. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Okay, we'll take a break. We'll be right back with Sarah Amadon on the Wayne Eddy Affair, a prosthetist, and before that, she was a marine biologist. I think that's the correct title, marine mm-hmm. biologist, all right, and likes muscle. Oh, I couldn't. I'm sorry.
The holiday season is here, filled with blessings of wonder and cheer. At Northfield Retirement Community, we value the traditions of this very special time and are happy to be sharing them with our residents, our families, staff, and friends. The halls are decked with ribbons and bows, and joyful music abundantly flows. From all of us at Northfield Retirement Community, we'd like to wish you and your families a safe, happy, and heartfelt Merry Christmas. Northfield Retirement Community. Innovation. Choice. Tradition.
The Craig Keller Insurance Agency in the Nearstrand wishes all a Merry Christmas and sends best wishes for the holiday season filled with happiness. It is the hope of the Craig Keller Insurance Agency that the peace of the holiday season will be with you always. For your farm, home, auto, and life, come see Craig at Keller Insurance in Nearstrand.
The staff, management, and drivers at Benjamin Bus and Northfield Lines would like to wish everyone happy holidays, Merry Christmas, and a very happy new year. Everyone at Benjamin Bus and Northfield Lines thanks you for your patronage and looks forward to serving the Northfield community and surrounding areas.
Hey, by the way, since we're talking about Benjamin Bus and John Benjamin, his older brother, the late Larry Benjamin, used to own the quarterback club. And, of course, now Dale Finger owns a quarterback club, and he's owned it for, I'll bet you, a quarter of a century. Anyhow, Dale invites you to stop in. It's locally owned, locally managed, and treat yourself to their delicious baby back barbecued ribs with mountains of madness just oozing all over them in the form of their very special sauce. You'll love it. And, of course, they're well known for their broasted chicken. And if you're busy during this holiday season, just order up a bucket, call it in. It'll be ready for you when you get there. And if you are in a hurry, remember they serve breakfast till 10 o'clock every morning. And by the time you sit down, they're bringing your food to you, whether it be pancakes, waffles, bacon and eggs, a cup of coffee, a donut, whatever. They have it all at the locally owned Quarterback Club on Highway 3 and 3rd Street in Northfield, Minnesota. Should I turn this one down? Wait a minute.
Ooh, I think it's okay.
Name that tune.
Creep.
That's right. Can you tell me who did it? They had the number 2 song also. This is number 3.
It's not TLC?
Yes, it is.
Oh, okay.
You're doing good. You got them all so far. 12 minutes before 10 o'clock on KYMN Radio. Good morning, the Wayne Eddy Affair in your ear. Sarah Amadon is my guest this morning. She is a professional prosthetist out of Rochester, Minnesota, and also a former marine biologist. And we're talking about her college education and the fun she had the first couple of years and then settled down and started working on it. So my big question is, Were you thinking about and hoping about your first trip on an ocean vessel that undertook scientific measures to help the world?
I was to some extent, and I actually got to work. When I was in school, I worked part-time on a research boat. However, we were really geared towards the research boat I worked on was just would go out in the afternoons, and we actually became part of the curriculum for the, I want to say, fifth and sixth grade science classes of the elementary schools in the city I lived. So we would bring the younger kids on and do little experiments with them, although we were actually kind of gathering data long term. But that was a really fun way to do it, to, you know, kind of be learning myself, but also getting to be immediately teaching and seeing these kids kind of learn it along with us.
Well, tell us about one of the experiments or whatever you did with these fifth and sixth graders.
Oh, I'm going to have to remember. We were doing, I know we were kind of testing the salinity and turbidity of the water around us. Again, we were in Puget Sound. I'm trying to remember, we were doing some work with the microscopes. We're also just gathering a lot of the invertebrates and some of the marine life around there, and doing some just kind of very general assessment on their health.
And you have to always, when you're a scientist and you say, use a word, a lot of people know what you're talking about, but there are some saying, I've heard invertebrate. What is an invertebrate?
One of our little marine critters. So think of your animals like mussels or clams, or think of your lobsters, I should really say, or your crabs, or
Has the jellyfish infested that part of the ocean? Because I know they are in some areas of the world.
They are, but they're not an infestation. They're a natural occurring animal. There's so many different types of jellyfish. They're a natural occurring animal in that environment. It's interesting, that's a very cold ocean. So whereas you see a lot of those animals in more of your tropical habitats that have venom or stingers or things that we would react to as humans, because the environment there is so cold and harsh up in the Pacific Northwest, they don't need to have so much of that venom and those kind of natural defense mechanisms, because it's just hard enough to survive anyways.
And so, of course, one of the things about jellyfish is they have no brain, no bones, no skeleton, nothing. They're just blobs eating up the plankton.
They have very interesting symmetrical systems inside their body.
Did you see whole one, dissect one?
Yes. Yep. I did a lot of dissection, and I apologize. I'm trying to remember back to, it's been a long time since I was in college, and I will be honest, my specialty was really marine mammals. So I had to do some of the fish invertebrates for my classes, but I really went on the marine mammal route, and that's where my career took me. So I left some of that education that I learned many years ago behind and haven't used it since then. So my ability to recall some of that information is not spot on anymore. I know if I kind of peek back.
Well, you know more about it than I do, that's
yes,
for sure.
Yes, true.
By the way, did you have a job when you were in high school?
I did. I was a swim instructor.
Oh, a what?
I was a swim teacher. A lifeguard and a swim instructor.
Oh, okay. Where'd you lifeguard?
Southdale YMCA.
Okay. Not at Lake Harriet or anything like that?
Nope, because I was out during the summers. I was out at the camp I was working at as a counselor and lifeguard. And then during the, you know, when I was back in school, I was a swim teacher and a lifeguard during those years.
Is that the sun bothering you?
It is. It's perfectly hit me right in my eye now. That's all right. I can just turn this way.
Well, if you want, I can take a break here, and you can stand up and just reel that down.
We can do that.
Don't forget to take the headsets off.
Okay.
A lot of people got up and they,
what reaction?
We'll be right back with our guest, Sarah Amidon, in just a moment. But first, these important messages.
The harvest is in at Syngenta Research Station in Stanton, and we are hard at work in the labs evaluating data. Syngenta Seeds knows the holidays are a time to celebrate and be thankful for our many blessings. It's also a time we can enjoy the Cannon Falls High School Christmas Concert. Syngenta Research Station in Stanton is a proud sponsor of the Cannon Falls High School Christmas Concert, and we'd like to wish everyone a happy holidays.
Hi, I'm Melissa, director at the Vitalink Adult Day Center on the Three Links campus. Are you the primary caregiver of an adult living at home? Do you need a break from caregiving to recharge and do what you need or like to do during the day? That is where our program can help. We will provide a fun, nurturing setting for your loved one to thrive at. VitaLink Adult Day Center. Transportation is available. Call 664-8865 to learn more or go to 3links.org.
The staff at Reese Winter & Associates would like to take a special time out and wish everyone a very Merry Christmas. Reese Winter & Associates would also like to thank you for your patronage. We look forward to serving you during the upcoming year. Happy holidays from Reese Winter & Associates.
Name that tune.
Kiss from a Rose by Seal.
You're right. You know your music.
I did.
1995, the year she was a junior at South High School. I couldn't locate my 96 year. You graduated from high school. Our guest this morning is Sarah Amidon at 6 minutes before 10 o'clock. Sarah, you had those summer jobs. You earned yourself some money. You got your bicycle. You were late in developing riding a bicycle. You got your car when you were a junior at Washington, or the name of the school?
Western Washington.
We talked about your being on the ocean for the first time and teaching fifth and sixth graders what little you knew already. Mm-hmm. And were you comfortable with the desire to be a marine biologist from the get-go, even after you may have taken some extra courses to accommodate the necessary knowledge you needed?
I was. It was something that had been a passion of mine since I was a younger kid and in high school. I didn't have anything else at that time that I wanted to do. I couldn't imagine a life that I wasn't doing that. So there wasn't any other choice for me because there was no plan B.
Did it come from a smartphone, a computer, from television programs? How did you, I mean, who knows about whales in Minnesota?
Yes. As a swimmer and a, you know, as my mom would always call me, a little fish anyways, I was always in the water. So that was, you know, I loved animals growing up and going to the zoos and aquariums. But when I was, I can't remember if I was in eighth grade or a freshman in high school, we went to visit my grandparents who, they were from Lutzen, Minnesota, but, well, they were from Mankato, but they lived in Lutzen, Minnesota at the time. They spent their
Lucy?
Lutzen.
Lutzen, okay.
Yep. They spent their winters down in Florida. And my mother and I would go visit them. We went down to the Florida Keys, and I got to do a swim with the dolphin program. Again, I want to say freshman in high school. And that was it. I was hooked. That was all I needed to know. I want to work with these animals. I want to learn about this environment. And that was my focus from then on.
Do you have to pick a specialty when you're going through marine biology? Do you say, I want to study... Well, let's use Minnesota. I want to study northerns. I want to study walleye. Well, I want to study frogs. Do you pick a certain species and say, I want to specialize in that?
You don't. Not right away in college. I didn't have to pick a certain direction. And the college, that Huxley College of Science that I went to, that was within Western Washington, was a very... I will say at the time, New Age approach, and it was a very environmental studies look at all of this versus the more traditional kind of, you know, science, biology and chemistry. This was a little bit more look at the ecology of it, how one thing reacts to the other. So I didn't have to pick a certain species or a focus at that time. And I will admit, somebody who knew that they always wanted to work with marine mammals, more of my education in college was actually not geared towards that as much, so I had to kind of just slowly make my way through some of the classes that I was not as interested in, but just kept knowing I wanted to do marine mammals. But even after college, one of my first jobs right after I graduated was working for the University of Washington down in Seattle doing salmon spawning research. So, and again, salmon were, I was, you know, not much of a fish lover, although my education had to be in that direction. But that was a really fun job. It was an active job. I was in the water. It was cold in the fall, and we were collecting salmon by hand as they're making their way back to spawn, which is the very end of their life. And
that's amazing, that trek out there, yeah. How they know where to go.
Yes.
You know, one of the things that just really amazes me, and I am certainly not knowledgeable, but I do really enjoy nature shows. I look at it and go, if there's a reason to be living, is to just be in awe of the creatures in the ocean.
Yes.
So here is this huge blue whale or whatever, and they are eating plankton.
Mm-hmm.
Plankton. These big, huge mammals eating something you can't see. What is plankton? What is that stuff?
Tiny, well...
This is a test.
It can be kind of a variety of little critters. I guess critters is a great name. Krill, for example. Very, to some extent, microscopic, or at least pretty tiny. And they are able to filter it through their, what they have, baleen. They don't have teeth. Those kinds of whales. There are toothed whales, and there's baleen whales. Mm-hmm. And the largest whales, aside from the sperm whale, are baleen whales. So they filter plankton. You do have toothed whales as well, though, that eat what we would more...
Other whales.
Well, that eat fish, other more, kind of what we would more traditionally think of. So you have two different options there in the whale world. You can be a toothed whale, or they may be a baleen whale. And yes, it seems that our most... the blue whale, like you brought up, is the largest, and they're a baleen whale. Humpback whales, people are real familiar with them, a baleen whale. And they take in a huge scoop of water, and then that filters back out through these really kind of thin, I'm going to get real science-y here, but it's keratin plates like your fingernails, and it catches all of the little food particles, all the little plankton pieces. And then the water gets flushed back out, and they eat the plankton that stays inside.
Well, it does. It is amazing when you think about what that big whale is eating and how much he has to eat a day. Mm-hmm. And then the trips they take, some up to 6,000 miles to mate, and of course, a mammal, if I'm correct, is anything that produces milk for their offspring.
That's one of the five requirements. That's one of them. Yeah.
What are they there for?
Oh gosh, now you're
this is
me.
A test.
Well,
you're
prosthetist
thinking.
Now. So, yep.
This is it's 10 o'clock. I have to give a KYMN radio break here. We are the 95.1 FM, and we are. The 1080 a.m. for over 50, well, not over 50 Christmases until next Tuesday. KYMN, downtown Northfield, Minnesota. My theme song for the second hour while we wait for our young lady to respond to my test. Here are the Beatles and When I'm 64.
When I get older, losing my head, many years from now, will you still be sending of wine? If I'd been out till 2:45, would you lock the door? Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64?
We're back, live and in color from our studios in downtown Northfield. Our guest this morning is Sarah Amidon. She is a prosthetist and living in Rochester, Minnesota. And before that, she was a marine biologist. And we're talking about whales and other mammals right now. And a mammal, I suggested, is anything that lives on mother's milk, and four other things. Have you remembered what they were?
Oh, I think I've got four of the five, and this is embarrassing because I used to teach this information, but again, I don't use it anymore. So they have to breathe air, nurse their young, drink milk. They have to be warm-blooded, and they have hair, which a lot of people say, but whales don't have hair. But they do when they're born. If you ever get a close look at a bottlenose dolphin, for example, they have tiny... A dolphin.
Okay.
They have tiny little pores of follicles right around what's called their rostrum, but their mouth. And they have hair when they're born, and it falls out quickly after birth. But because they had hair, at least in some part of their lifespan, they are still considered a mammal.
Yeah. So even though I don't have hair, I'm a mammal.
Okay. You are still a mammal.
So... You're moving along in regards to your marine biology career. Were you aware of when you will make a overnight, a week, a month on a ship to do further studying or to help along a program with the DNR? What that had to be, I don't know if you did that, but if you did, that had to be pretty exciting.
I didn't do any long-term research on a ship. I was working at, after college, I got some internships and was working at research facilities, but they were dolphin-based. So I had a small gig or an internship at the Dolphin Research Center in the Florida Keys, and then I ended up moving over to Hawaii and worked at a private research facility, dolphin-specific, although we also had a kind of a group or a second division of that facility that was humpback whale research specific. Now, they weren't out on a ship for days at a time. They were just out. We'd go out in the boat during the day, do our research, collect our information, collect our data, and then go back and process it at night.
Well, here's where I get pretty specific. Okay, number one, to have the boat ready and have everybody boarded and get out of the harbor and get out to the spot that you're going to, that takes a while. And then reverse that, where you got to go back and redo and onboard, get off the boat. That takes a lot of time. And, of course, the travel time. So what do you end up doing? And how many hours do they dedicate to just hardcore catch and release or whatever you're doing?
Well, we were that was a very small boat, just your basic speed boat. And there's, you know, five or six of us on the boat. So that, yes, every morning it's, you know, loading your stuff. You are out in the boat all day. When I was doing that kind of section of it. And, yeah, you're sitting and you're watching. That's the kind of thing you don't. You know, you see the glamorous stuff of it on the nature shows, but you don't see all the time. You are sitting and waiting and scanning the horizon with your eyes, trying to see animals out there, trying to find the animals. There's a lot of downtime. Although, for me, that downtime was in Hawaii. So that's, you know, you're surrounded by a beautiful environment. If we get too hot, we get in the water and take a break. And, you know, you just enjoyed the...
Well, you're a redhead.
I am.
So I would assume that the sun is not real nice to you compared
to, not.
Like, when I was a kid, I was a sun worshiper and just tanned. I didn't... It got burnt once. Yes. That was enough. So was that a problem at all?
Yes. Sunscreen has been a part of my life since I was... My mother was very good at applying it and taught me that I had to do it. And I, had to wear it religiously and had to wear a visor or hats. But it still definitely affected me, being a pale-skinned redhead. But yeah, I just kind of learned to dress appropriately, and I never wear anywhere without a hat and sunscreen on, and apply it over and over again, more so than any of my friends. It was time-consuming.
What about seasickness? Have you ever experienced that?
I have when I was young, probably on a larger... I think we did a cruise from Norway to Denmark. Overnight, just an overnight ride. Yes, and I was quite seasick. But in my adult years, I've never had a problem with it, and I worked on enough boats that, small or large, that either scenario I don't seem to have any issue with, thank goodness.
I did just the opposite. Well, I did it both ways. I went Denmark to Norway and Norway back to Denver. And though I didn't, there were some people, I guess, when I think about it, that did get a little seasick, but there's such a... the one I was on, it was pretty large, and, you know, I was busy at the roulette table. At 6 past 10 o'clock on the Wayne Eddy Affair, my guest this morning is prosthetist Sarah Hamadan. And, Sarah, when you did you ever fish, I mean, for pleasure when you were either in northern Washington or Hawaii or Florida Keys?
The Keys. A little bit. When I lived in the Florida Keys, my roommate, or the gentleman who owned the home I had a room out of, was a sports fisherman as his job. And so I went out with him a little bit. I did not grow up as a fisherman. That was not, even though my family does have a cabin now, but we didn't when I was growing up. And although I spent a lot of time in the water, that just wasn't something I grew up, aside from, I mean, just kind of the casual stuff, but not something I was ever really skilled at or knew a lot about.
Of all the fish and mammals that you have had the opportunity to study,
yes,
which were your favorite? Am I going to assume that it's going to be the porpoise?
Yes. Dolphins are my initial draw to the field, and they were my love. And then I did have the chance to work with them for a good portion of that career, and they were definitely my love. Although sea lions are kind of like a dog in the water and have wonderful personalities as well, and they were a lot of fun. But it's funny, I have worked with such a wide variety of animals as my career went on, not only marine animals. And every time when I'm training or working with them, I always find something that surprises me that makes me love that animal as well. So there's, I'm constantly surprised.
There are a couple of men that have felt that they would like to feed sea lions.
Mm-hmm.
That's the big, the beautiful multi bones sticking out. And is that the one that I'm thinking? Or you
sea lions and seals?
Okay,
similar.
I'm thinking of the.
You're thinking of a walrus.
No, I'm thinking of an actual fish. Lion King? No, that's wrong. Anyhow, they're real pretty, but their protection are all these beautiful webbed fins. And
fish, a lionfish?
Yeah, is that what it is? Okay. Yeah. What did I say at first?
Lionfish. Maybe that's what I'm picturing.
Yeah, it's a real pretty fish.
Yes.
But there are a couple of guys that are trying to feed that to the world. But they have to be caught almost independently, one at a time. Well, good luck for that. I guess they taste good. Okay, when you said sea lion, I went the other way. I don't know why, but how talk about the wild porpoise or
dolphin or porpoises, but they're slightly different.
Okay, dolphins, what everybody likes, especially in Miami. But would you say that the ones that are captive and the personality to the ones that you've seen in the wild, what are the differences?
Well, I've worked with both. I've done kind of wild research with wild, but I've also done a lot of work with dolphins, sea lions, seals, all those in human care as well. Obviously, the ones in human care, we get to see and learn a lot more of the personality from them that I won't necessarily experience with those in the wild. And it kind of goes back and forth in that things that I learned from the wild species we use in our training and our work with those that are in human care, and vice versa. What we learn from the animals in human care, we're applying to the animals in the wild that are they're kind of both cluing us into each other. But obviously, the animal that I'm working with every day, hands on, physically in the water with them, that's where I get the most insight into that animal and how intelligent they are and manipulative and all the different facets of they're each an individual and personalities, which is maybe not a great word because they're not a person, but they definitely have their own individual personalities, their own individual skill set, which is something you can't quite pick out until you're actually working with them hand on.
Well, that was where my questioning was going to go, because every child and every adult think they're so cute and they chatter and they're so smart and they can be mean.
Mm-hmm.
And tell me about some of the experiences that you had. I mean, do you really think that you communicated eyeball to eyeball or sound to sound or touch to touch with the...
That's a great question. It's funny because the first half of my kind of research career was specifically studying cognition, intelligence, and communication skills with dolphins and with humpback whales. And then getting to actually work with them hands-on, yes, I think that there's certain animals that really enjoyed having a person in the water with them or doing some of the public interactions. They really thrived off that. There were other individual dolphins, for example, that was not their skill set. They did not enjoy having people in the water kind of prodding and touching at them. And we had to, you had to figure that out pretty early on. But they maybe were incredibly athletic and really thrived off of some of the problem-solving training that we were doing, or a lot of the, what you're used to seeing, a lot of the flips, a lot of the more acrobatic stuff. They thrived off of learning those techniques. And the training aspect is stimulation for them. And they want to learn the way that we want to. I mean, in the same way that humans want to learn. They don't want to just be stagnant. So they always really thrived off that. And you were asking about, can they be mean? Certainly. I've witnessed them be very, very mean to each other. And I have, in my career, definitely had some scenarios where I have been aggressed, is what we would say, upon. Although it isn't necessarily having to do with me. It may have been having to do with communication going on with the other animals in the water I just happen to be right there, so I kind of get the brunt of it. But that's very rare, considering how much I was in the water, or how many times I was working with those animals every day. That was definitely an extreme rarity. And there's a lot of signs that we would look for in the animal to see if they're getting stressed, and they show us. And that simply takes time of me working the same way that you have to get to know, you know, a person you're working with or a friend. You have to kind of slowly make your way through their different levels and kind of pick up signs from them. Same thing with the animal. It's a very slow process, and you have to really take the time and invest that time into learning their cues because, yeah, we can't speak to each other. So I have to look at body language or, you know, if they're blushing pink. For example, a lot of our dolphins, their stomachs blush bright pink when they get excited. So there's things that we can see and cues that we can see. Or in reality, if they don't want to be doing or working with me, they just swim away. They have the option to do that at any time. And sometimes that happens. You say, okay, let's take a break.
Have you ever been in danger?
You know, that's a good question. I wouldn't say I ever felt like I was in danger. But that's also just because I was really trained as to how to deal with situations if they ever happened. How to know how to pick up on those cues and say, well, let's take a break. You're getting frustrated. The animals in the back pen are messing around. They're, you know, being naughty. So that's just not even put ourselves in the situation. You know, the funniest thing of all the animals that I've worked with, you want to know who the biggest biters are of them all? Penguins. I have more scars from penguins than I do from any other animal I worked with. Those beaks are pretty brutal. And everybody thinks of them as these cute, fuzzy animals. And they are. Once you spend the time to really kind of earn their trust, then they are incredibly loving. But you have to get there. And in the meantime, there's a lot of bites getting there.
What kind of penguins are you talking that you work with?
I worked with humble penguins.
Okay. They're a little bit smaller.
Yeah, they're not the tiniest. They're not the biggest. They're kind of in the middle.
Okay. They're the one with the orange flare?
Nope. These guys are a kind of traditional tuxedo, black and white.
Okay.
Yep. And they look like there's that species, and there's a kind of some similar species in African penguin that you also see in a lot of zoos and aquariums.
I know sometimes I heard the word penguin and South America.
Mm-hmm.
And as a kid, you think, well, anything from Mexico south is all beautiful sunshine. Mm-hmm. And you forget that the Antarctic is just off of...
Most of your penguins are actually from warmer climates. Yeah. It's kind of a myth that they're from all cold. That's only a few species.
Well, we are going to take a break, and we're going to come back and continue our conversation at 10:16 on a beautiful Tuesday morning, a week from Christmas. And our guest this morning is Sarah Amadon. We'll be right back.
As the holidays approach, Rick Reisberg and everyone at Franz and Bank and Trust in Dundas would like to thank their customers and communities for their support throughout the year. They hope you have a safe and happy holiday season, and they wish you a very prosperous new year. They would love the opportunity to say thanks in person, so stop in for a cup of coffee and some conversation. Franz and Bank in Dundas is conveniently located on Highway 3 and County Road 1. Franz and Bank and Trust. Real people, real results. Member FDIC. Merry Christmas and Happy New Year from Kenyon Holden Warsaw Mutual, where you can get the coverage you need from the people you know, and they will be there when you need them most, because Kenyon Holden Warsaw Mutual grows trust locally. Carla wants to thank all of her clients for their continued trust, and everyone at Kenyon Holden Warsaw Mutual and Grinnell Mutual would like to extend their best wishes in the coming year. Trust in tomorrow. Contact Kenyon Holden Warsaw Mutual, your local Grinnell Mutual provider in Wanamingo today. Trust in Tomorrow is a registered trademark of Grinnell Mutual Reinsurance Company.
Season's greetings from all the members of the Northfield American Legion Post 84. We wish you and your family the very best this holiday season. May the new year be filled with peace, love, joy, and everything wonderful. Happy holidays from the members of the Northfield American Legion Post 84, Sons of the American Legion, and the Auxiliary.
Merry Christmas and Happy New Year from Andy's Auto Body. Andy Nelson is the estimator, laborer, painter, and owner of Andy's Auto Body. He fixes everything from small dents to collision and enjoys working on new cars as well as classic cars. Andy's Auto Body is located near Webster on County Road 46. Look for the big body shop sign on his barn. Or you can find more info at andysautobody.net.
do know it. I do know it. It's not coming to my brain, but... I know it's one of our boy bands, and I'm trying to remember if it was Boyz II Men.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. You know the name of the tune?
No, I do, but I'm not remembering it. I'm bended knee.
Well, we'll give you 80% on that one. All right. Once again, I remind you, Sarah Amidon from Rochester, formerly Minneapolis and Washington and Hawaii and the Florida Keys. We're talking about her career as a marine biologist. And I've learned that you haven't spent a month aboard a big ship out there in the middle of nowhere. Have you ever had a scare from a whale coming up on your boat?
Not a scare. I will say, so I did some humpback whale research in Hawaii, and yes, the boats that we were on were definitely smaller than the whales themselves. Because we were a research team, we had permits to get much closer to the animals than you would on your normal whale-watching boat. I think those are 100 yards, no closer. Ours was 15 yards. But we were also collecting samples from the whale. Literally, we'd have kind of I don't want to say a dart gun, but it had a bungee cord to it, so we would collect a little sample right off of their dorsal fin. And it would immediately recall. So we were getting tissue samples. But we were also putting somebody in the water with a camera to get some video footage and to identify the sex of the animal, if they were male or female. And I had always thought I wanted that job. I said, oh my gosh, to get to be in the water with this, animal that's almost 50 feet long. And then when I saw somebody my size, I'm a pretty petite person, get put in the water, I thought, maybe I should think twice about that. But very exciting. But yes, turns out a little scary. But no, I've never been all that afraid being that close to them. It's always been more awe.
Did you ever feel sorry for the whale because you're shooting him with a dart?
No, our tiny little dart would be similar to a pinprick, of getting a shot or something by, as we would get. I mean, we're talking so tiny in this animal that's almost 50 feet. There's a good chance they don't even feel it.
What do you do with that then?
So then we're taking those tissue samples and just analyzing them, looking at a lot of different factors within that and assessing the health of the population, and it's kind of going into a database. We're also doing, at that time, we were doing a lot of identification because we're tracking those animals, those humpbacks coming from Alaska, where they're feeding in the summer. They're coming to Hawaii in the winter months to breed and to give birth. And so we're trying to keep track of those animals and getting identification. It's all based off of their dorsal fin, the fin on the back, or for humpbacks specifically, we're doing a lot of their flukes, which is their tail. Of your marine mammals, those are the two kind of body parts that you most often see above the water. So we're taking pictures, and those body parts, we go back, we scan our massive books of pictures, and we're trying to match because they're very individual. No two have the same exact notches, taken out or the exact same shape, and so we're literally matching them. Oh, look, we have a picture from 5 years ago of this whale here, and now they're back. A, we know they're still alive, and B, we're starting to use that. At the time, we're starting to use that to track them and see where are they going to feed. Are they going to Alaska? Are they going over to Japan? Are they going? Where are they going?
Now, from your days at Washington University or Western Washington University, that would be in the late 90s,
mm-hmm,
and maybe the early 2000s.
Yep.
A lot of things changed during that time in regards to microphones and microscopic utensils, etc. One thing I've always wondered is how do they get the sound with a microphone in the ocean?
Well, sound travels so well in the water. So you could even hear it living in Hawaii. If you just were in an environment that you were anywhere close to a pod of dolphins or a group of humpback whales, you can hear it underwater quite well. We would even, when we were up on the boat, if I put my ear to the hull of the boat up against the actual boat itself, the sound would travel through the boat. But it doesn't travel nearly as well once it reaches air. So we couldn't hear it on top of the boat when we're up sitting around, but if I put my ear to the boat or if I put my head underwater just a few feet, immediately you can hear it. And yeah, so then you're dropping microphones in Because we were, the facility I was working at, and this was, I will admit, a short part of my career, but the facility that we were working at was also looking at communication skills and their own language. And I don't want to get too much into it, but yes, yeah, studying the language of the humpback whale.
Why don't you want to get too much
into it? Oh, I don't want to take up too much time. But the language of the humpback whale, the fascinating part was all the whales around the world share the same language. And there's a series of sounds that they make. And all of those sounds are broken into little categories, and we have names set up. One of them sounds, for example, like a toilet flushing, the toilet bowl. And every year, the majority of that sound pattern stays the same, but some part of it continues to evolve. And somehow that piece that evolves manages to get transported or transferred around the oceans. And so you can look at humpback whales in another area of the ocean, and they have picked that up as well. How are they doing that? How are they evolving that? It was pretty fascinating. And that was kind of what we were trying to look into. And again, I'm now out of touch with this. We're talking early 2000s, so I haven't followed where that research has gone. But it was pretty fascinating. And you could be in the water. You're just playing, swimming around. You dive down a few feet, and all of a sudden you hear the sound come up, and you say, you know, it's getting closer. Oh, something's coming up underneath us. And all of a sudden a whale appears.
What's the deepest, and what whale can do it in regards to diving?
Oh, you're going to test my knowledge again. I have not used this information in so long. I can't remember if it's the sperm whale that we believe dives the deepest or if it's the blue whale. I know that there's...
It's very deep.
It's very deep. I mean, a few thousands of feet. A few thousand feet, or is it in meters? But I know that they have tracked some sperm whales where they actually put the tracking cameras and GPS systems on them, and have found them going incredibly deep, and have also found what they thought were an animal that lived in isolation. Turns out they're picking up sounds from other whales around them that we didn't know, that maybe there's more of a group down there than we thought, and maybe it's not just one whale.
Well, they say, and I would have moved... Imagine you would concur that we haven't seen everything yet when
Absolutely
it comes to
not.
The ocean, that it is so much more difficult than going to the moon.
It's, yes.
When I see film of these fish that live miles below the surface with no sunlight whatsoever, and they actually give off flashing lights,
mm-hmm.
I'm going, well... They use that to, you know, catch their prey or mm-hmm. attract a mate, but it just amazes me.
It's amazing. We've also, in the more recent years, discovered these communities that are living, these environments, no sunlight, that are living off of these hydro vents that are putting out what should be toxic, kind of, I don't want to say fumes.
It looks like smokestacks.
Yes, it does. But these entities that have evolved... kind of from some very basic biology to fully living environments down there, that nothing should thrive there based on the temperatures and based on the chemical makeup of the water, and yet these animals have adapted and are thriving in those environments.
It's
how
amazing.
Is that happening? Yes.
And you had the fortune of learning a lot more than the normal person. And we got to get you over to being a prosthetist.
Yes.
And we'll take a break here. And then we'll come back and find out what you did with your degree in marine biology and how you made the switch. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Our guest this morning on the Wayne Eddy Affair is Sarah Amadon. She is from Rochester now, but grew up in South Minneapolis. And I went to South High School. We'll be back in just a moment.
Do you have an old junk or car in the garage or on the farm? Call Huber's Auto Parts in Faribault, 507-332-2300. Get the most cash for your old junk or vehicle and have it taken away for free. Huber's Auto Parts in Faribault, 507-332-2300.
The Craig Keller Insurance Agency in the Strand wishes all a Merry Christmas and sends best wishes for the holiday season filled with happiness. It is the hope of the Craig Keller Insurance Agency that the peace of the holiday season will be with you always. For your farm, home, auto, and life, come see Craig at Keller Insurance in Near Strand.
Number six.
AMC Music Factory. Oh, it's like a French name. Something La Vue or something.
Well, you know the title. They're singing it. And you're singing it. Another Night.
Another Night. Like Boosh. No. Oh, what is the, what's the name?
It's a Real McCoy.
Oh, Real McCoy. Okay.
A little leftover from the 80s. Just another night. I like this one.
I'm pretty sure we were dancing to this in Canada.
Oh, yeah. Boombox time. It is 29 past the hour of 10 o'clock on this Tuesday, the 18th day of December. I should have said that at the top of the show, because maybe 25 years from now you will say, when did I record that? Okay, so you get out of school after going to, what were the far reaches of the world that you got to visit beside the Keys and northwestern, off the Canada, America, northwest?
Hawaii was the farthest I got away, I would
Hawaii,
say. Hawaii.
Of course, yeah.
And then I was there for, I want to say, around 3 years. And I really kind of, my career really took me more towards marine mammal training. So I wasn't doing the research that I had first gotten into. In the same sense, I was really working at facilities, working with animals that were in human care at that time. Again, dolphins,
good
sea lions,
pay?
Seals. No. Oh, gosh, no.
Because it's half volunteer?
Yeah, basically. It takes so much money to run the facilities, you know, the electricity bill, the mechanics, the water pump system, feeding the animals, the veterinary care for them, and then whatever's left over might go to those trainers. But you have 500 people that want to take your job from you so they can get away without paying you. You do it because you love it, and I loved every day, but you don't make any money
and,
yet.
And that's the way it is when you start off in broadcasting.
I imagine.
You know, everybody wants to be a sportscaster, for example, and they'll take anything to get the job.
Yeah.
And that's the way they should do it with some of the people that they hire for millions of dollars. You know, there's somebody smart as you out there that'll do it for 100,000.
Yes.
But anyhow, that was quite an experience. And of all the animals that you worked with, the porpoise, I keep saying the porpoise, the dolphin is the one that you most endeared yourself to?
The dolphin. And dolphins, whales, and porpoises all fall into one kind of group. Lots of similarities between them. And a porpoise and a dolphin look very, very similar. There's very minute differences between them. But yeah, dolphins, specifically, I worked with bottlenose dolphins. But seals and sea lions. And
what's the most unique thing about a seahorse?
Oh, well, I mean, the men, the males, I should say, are the ones carrying the babies around.
That's something
quite unique, yes.
Have you ever gotten into, animals that live above the ocean on ground, like in Africa or Brazil or America?
Yes, I have. I have a lot of allergies, unfortunately. So dusts and molds and pollens and a lot of animal allergies, horses, a lot of those kind of hoofstock, as we call them, animals, I can't work with, which maybe, I don't know, maybe that's why I went marine to begin with, but then that always meant it was would be very challenging for me to work with some of those animals, those land-dwelling animals, so I didn't go that route until later years. I actually ended up, I left Hawaii and moved to San Diego and worked at SeaWorld San Diego.
You did?
I did.
I've been there.
Yeah.
Hasn't everybody?
Wonderful place. I still have some wonderful friends that are there working.
They cut out the...
They've changed kind of the focus of their
programs. Yeah, what was the whale they quit?
The killer whales orcas.
The ones with the white belly. And, Oh, I was amazed. It is amazing.
Such an
intelligent. How you do that, I don't know.
They are incredible. Well, they're actually a dolphin. They're the largest species of dolphin, but they are incredibly intelligent. So they still work with them. They've just cut out some of the water work that they were doing. And I'm speaking for it. I was not there when all that went down, so I'm by no means an expert on some of the changes that they've made. But just kind of moving more of an educational approach, which was really always what they were doing in the background. And they've just kind of made that more the forefront.
Well, if you have never been there, it was an absolute treat where you have an MC that works with the whale and then the trainers, and all of a sudden he says a magic word and this huge, big, huge whale comes flying out of the pool, and you go, wow. That has to be a thrill to rehearse with them, huh?
Yes, I never worked with them specifically. One of my best friends did work on that team. But yeah, I mean, just an amazing, awe-inspiring animal, too. Just spectacular.
I have so many more questions, and you've had that experience, but I also want to, you know, move you into your next vocation.
Yeah.
So when did it, other than the income, when did you say, you know what, I found out what this is all about, I know as much as I want to know, I got to do something that's more fulfilling, and what will that be? Tell me about that.
Transition.
Yes.
Well, I went through some personal things and ended up having to leave San Diego. And yes, as we kind of touched on, it's not a field where you make any money at. You just do it because you love what you do every day, working with all animals in general. And I ended up coming back to Minneapolis to be closer to my family and was working at Como Zoo for a while and at Minnesota Zoo in more of an educational kind of approach in that department.
What about your allergies?
That was always a little bit of a problem. I couldn't be around. I did feed the giraffes once in a while just for fun, but I couldn't work with the hoof stock.
Well, that's a reach.
Yeah, but I worked with, I can kind of continue still in the marine approach, although this is going to sound silly, but I worked with lots of dogs and cats, training, pigs, ducks, chickens, tortoises.
At the zoo?
At the zoo. So I've definitely done a spectrum of animals.
Well, is a chicken really as dumb as people think they
you
are?
You know, I was not all that excited when I learned I was going to be working with chickens, and yet I had a couple that I was training, and I loved them. And now I have so much more love for them than I ever did before. They were so much fun.
How about the tortoise?
They're pretty slow moving, but again, you just, no matter what, you always develop a relationship with any animal that you're working hands-on with, so you end up just having a love for them.
How many giraffes were there when you were there?
Oh, I want to say there's four or five. This is a Como Zoo, and they have a successful breeding program. So,
did you ever witness a fight between two males?
I never saw anything. But again, I wasn't working in that department.
Scary.
I was working in the aquatics department, which was they had at Como Zoo. They had sea lions and polar bears. I was volunteering at that point and then went education.
I'm glad you mentioned Como Zoo because I come from the era where the zoo, they were displayed in cages and they stunk to high heaven and they paced and paced, you know, the lions, the gorillas, and then they had Monkey Island and they had a tortoise that you could ride.
Yep.
And I just remember feeling sorry for the animals, and it really stank. Stunk? It stinked.
Well, the funny thing is when I was working there, those buildings where those individual cages were became the buildings that we were working in, and our individual cubicles were now what used to be an animal pen. And we had the picture of the animal that was in there at the time. So now we were the ones in the little cubicles. But, you know, as everything evolves, you know, medicine, we keep moving forward, learning things. We thought we were doing it right back then. We learned there's a better way to do this. There was a long period of time in the 80s where we thought that we needed to make the environment as clean as possible, and the best way to do that was to have it be all concrete so you could easily spray it down. Well, now that field has really learned, no, we need to bring in as much, they live in the wild, they can handle germs. Let's bring in as many natural, you know, let's get some trees back in here. Let's get some grass. Let's try to make this look like a more natural environment. And everybody is moving that direction. Obviously, Minnesota Zoo always had a good space of land to do that. Como Zoo, in my memory, being a city-run zoo, they were not allowed to expand their footprint. So what they did over time was have fewer species on hand. People are saying, well, what happened to such and such animal? Well, they have fewer species so that they can expand the areas that they have for the remaining species.
Do they still have Monkey Island?
That's changed a little bit.
Okay.
They did a huge overhaul to their primate building and really expanded that area a few years ago. And they're doing, you know, one thing at a time. But that's a city-run zoo. It's free. Most people don't pay or even donate when they walk in the door. Well, how do you think that, you know, facility gets their money? Well, it's donations. So it's always a challenge. To
end of the year donation, folks.
Yes.
I've been bitten by a monkey.
Oh, have you?
Yes. And I had a run-in with a relatively new baby, maybe, elephant.
Ooh.
and with its mom.
Uh-huh.
And I was holding my ice cream cone. I was probably 8, 9 years old. And this baby elephant reached out and grabbed my ice cream cone. I'll never forget that. In one way, it was, man, that was cool. And the other way was, hey, that's my ice cream cone.
Yeah.
And the monkey one was, they actually used to, you've probably seen it in movies, they actually did have the organ grinder and the monkey who would run along with a tin cup and want money.
Yeah.
And when I was carrying newspapers in Indianapolis, a guy, back then men wore loose pants, and he showed the monkey the coin, but he put it in his pocket. And the monkey went over and put his hand in and took the coin out and put it in his cup.
Huh.
Well, I thought, well, I'd like that. That'd be cool. And I was going to use a quarter, which was, you could buy a full, thick, rich malt for a quarter back then. I put it in my pocket, and of course my pants were a little bit tighter than the other guy, and the monkey got frustrated because he couldn't get into my pocket and grabbed my hand and bit me in the knuckle. It hurt.
Yep.
Now, today that happened, I'd have how many lawyers on that?
Yes.
Yeah. We're going to take a break, and we're going to come back and get you into the profession you're in now, all right? We'll be right back. Our guest this morning is a prosthetist and a former marine biologist, and her name is Sarah Amadon.
You love your pets, and the Lonsdale Feed Store has just what you're looking for this holiday season. Lonsdale Feed has holiday heggies, snug and tug toys, a wide variety of dog and cat treats, and even clothing and walking harnesses. Lonsdale Feed also has 30 different varieties of dog and cat food, plus catch and fetch balls and sticks. This year, give your pet something to be excited about on Christmas morning when you shop at the Lonsdale Feed Store. Steve and his crew would like to wish you and yours a safe and happy holiday season, and they look forward to serving you in 2019.
It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas here at the KYMN Studios. We're bringing a little joy to the world with prizes for our listeners. Santa Claus is coming to town with local area gift certificates for flowers and clothing, auto care and sports, and a whole lot more. Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer has Northfield area chamber bucks for every winter. Even the Grinch has stocked KYMN with treats for your pets and you. Listen to the KYMN Morning Show, 6 to 9 every weekday, now through December 21st, for your chance to win. When you hear Santa say, ho, 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 Merry Christmas, be the third caller and win. Listen to 95 The One, AM 1080, and streaming at KYMNradio.net. Then call 507-645-5695.
That's Mariah Carey.
Yes, it is. Have you ever wanted to be like her, sing like her?
Oh, I wish. I have a terrible singing voice.
Was that a fantasy of yours?
Yes, I'd love to be a singer. I'm terrible at it.
Well, the name of the tune is Fantasy.
Oh, okay. Nice to be done.
And it is Mariah or Maria?
Mariah.
Mariah Carey. Like 4 octaves or more?
Oh,
unbelievable. And she was engaged to that billionaire and got that huge ring and then dumped him. Oh, I'm up on everything. Little gossip here and there. 18 minutes before 11 o'clock on KYMN Radio, you're listening to the Wayne Eddy Affair on 1080 AM. We give that information out frequently because some people like talk radio, and they'll dial up and down, and they'll hear two people talking and say, oh, I wonder what they're talking about. Oh, they're talking about the Vikings. I better stick around. Oh, they're talking about marine biology? What's this about? That's why I give your name and occupation so frequently. Okay?
All right.
Besides, everybody likes to hear their name. I know that. But so now, for whatever reasons, you come back from Hawaii, and you take up residence in Minneapolis. Do you come home first and then find a job, or do you find a job and then come home?
No, I came home. I did leave my job in San Diego and had nothing, did not have a job lined up here. But I found a job here working in this kind of our different zoo environment in Minnesota, but I definitely felt like I had kind of peaked in a way in my previous career. I mean, I got to work with dolphins in Hawaii, who nothing better than that. But there was no loss of love for that field. I did not want to leave the field, but kind of found, here's the reality of my situation. It's time for me to find something here that I can really make a career of. And did a lot of soul searching, and, you know, we touched on that earlier. Found my way into the prosthetic and orthotic field, even though I didn't have any background knowledge of it before, but we had that school locally, so I just started to dive in and went to school and got my master's degree in prosthetics and orthotics.
So was there one, there wasn't any one particular person, you didn't know anybody, mm-hmm. you just thought that you're caring, and, you know, as a marine biologist, caring was, you know, a major part of your makeup, and
true.
So now you're doing this with people that can use extended limbs or whatever, and mm-hmm. whatever is amazing. So hitting the books.
Yes.
Now you're going from biology to physiology or whatever it's called, and now you're looking at the human structure. And you went to school in St. Paul for that?
White Bear Lake was Century College. That was the first half of my education.
Did you live in St. Paul then? Or
no, I went back to South Minneapolis made the commute. And then the master's portion of my education was at Concordia in St. Paul. But that was online. I was working at that point.
On Hamlin and Marshall?
Yep.
I used to live on that corner.
Oh, yeah?
You know the gas station there?
Yes.
There was a house behind it. The first floor were tires and batteries, and the second floor was a tiny apartment.
Huh.
And it had a sign hanging over that went... And right on my bedroom window, a little tiny, like a closet almost, gas for less, gas for less. That's when gas was like 25 cents a gallon. But anyhow, I like to throw those things in. And for those of you that say, Wayne, you've told that story three or four times. This lady has never heard that.
I have not heard it.
It's a way to get to know one another, is to share stories. After all, I've been asking a lot about yourself. And so we're the testing out on being a prosthetist and the other thing that you are.
Orthotist.
An orthotist that is, you're going to get that license soon. Was it harder?
Yes. You know, the nice thing about going back to school in your later life is, you know, there's a lot more at stake. I was making a lot of sacrifices to do this, so I better study hard. So it's a lot more focused this time around. I had the basic biology, chemistry, obviously, down, but I didn't have the study of humans. So I had to really dive into the human anatomy, physiology, biomechanics, which was fascinating to me. And, I mean, you're right. I had worked still in a caring position before, so transferring to humans in a position where I'd be providing care, that part was somewhat seamless to me. But, of course, learning the medicine behind it all, that took a lot of work. It took a lot of studying and being very vigilant and saying no to going out and seeing friends and just kind of really hunkering down and getting through it. It was about 5 years. There's 2 to 3 years of the first part of the program of technician where you learn how to build everything. You could stop there. You can kind of move on to the mid-level where you're an assistant. You could stop there, or you could go on all the way and become a practitioner, and that was a master's degree. So 2 more years of master's, and then it's between 18 months and 2 years of residency, one in prosthetics and one in orthotics. So it's
Have you been witness to the surgery performance of doctors?
I have been in the OR only a few times so far, but it's once surgery is complete and the patient's sewed up. But I'm fascinated by that, and I'm, you know, not thrown off by blood and guts, I guess I would say. So, yes, I'd love to have an opportunity to be and get to observe more of that.
Well, when I had mine done, I told the guy, I says, I want to watch.
Oh, yeah.
And the surgeon, I guess, not the guy. And he said, are you nuts? And I said, no. I said, what? He said, well, we'll see what we can do. Well, they gave me a drug.
Yeah.
So I was in and out, more out than in. But I did get a chance to kind of watch the prep work and all that. And the other day, I found a study video on lower leg amputation. And I didn't finish it. But I was amazed. But then I went, holy cow, do they know what they're doing? Mm-hmm. How do they do that? That's why I wanted to see and the work that's involved. So you'll probably observe something like that to know and understand exactly what they're doing and why. nerves are reversed.
Mm-hmm.
And the funny feelings that you have that shouldn't be in that place, they should be in another place,
mm-hmm.
all because of the nerve movements.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyhow, I thought I'd share that with you. So how where do you take your tests for that second license?
Well, there's... It's three exams for prosthetics and three exams for orthotics. There's two writtens, which we take here, and you can take locally at a testing center. I took mine in the Twin Cities. And then there's a practitioner, or a patient, I should say, exam, where you're actually working with patient models, and there is only one facility in Florida, in Tampa, that does that. So you fly to Florida, and you do that. So
how,
I did all.
How long is that?
It's about 4 hours.
Oh, it's a turnaround trip.
Oh, yeah. The exam itself is about 4 hours. So I flew in there the day beforehand, took my test.
In Florida?
In Florida, okay. And then flew out that
And that's
night.
The only place they test?
Mm-hmm.
For which?
That's the what they call the CPM exam. It's a facility that's set up to have patient models there and ready, and you are kind of just, you know, you have a tester with a, well, what used to be a clipboard, now an iPad. They're watching over your shoulder and watching you interact with the patient and then also asking you questions on the spot. So well, incredibly nerve-wracking.
Are they new patients or are they people that do this
they
for
do that
50
for,
bucks or something?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
There's a little, yes, exactly.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. So that test is three-part and you're done with that?
I did. I'm completed with it for prosthetics. That was a year ago. I have done two of the two written exams locally this past November for orthotics, and then the beginning of January, I fly to Florida to take my final patient care.
Are you pretty excited about that?
Oh, I'm incredibly nervous.
And you don't have to answer some of my questions, but does each one of those tests that you pass bump your salary expectations?
Well, I once you complete those, then you are, if you complete the exams, then you are then a certified practitioner versus just being what they would call board eligible. So yes, that does put you into a different category. You know, there's a resident, you know, residents are kind of doing a lot of grunt work, a lot of observing. That's pretty low level. And you start making your way up. Once you're complete with your residency, then you are considered board eligible until you pass your exams. Then you're certified. And then you now in the state of Minnesota, we can also get licensed, so a licensed practitioner as well.
Now, in your previous career, I would say that there's a larger portion of women than
yes.
men that go into that. And, you know, that's the care, the warmth, the motherhood, et cetera. And now into this profession, are you breaking the glass ceiling, or are there a lot of women that before you, or are you one of the pioneers of women being in this profession, or do you know it all?
No, there are women who came before me that have broken through in this field. It's definitely still a mostly male-dominant field, just historically.
Mostly what?
It was mostly males.
Yeah.
But there were a few women that have made their way up, and now in school, there's a lot more women going into the field. In my class, it was definitely not even. It was more males than females, but I was not the only female by any means. I am the only female practitioner at Limb Lab currently. You know, and there's, as you know from being in the amputee, it's an intimate experience. You have to kind of learn, and you have to get to know and trust your prosthetist, your practitioner for orthotics or prosthetics. So there's definitely some benefits to being a female for some of our female patients who, it's just a very intimate experience. So it's nice to have a female practitioner on staff that I can be there for patients for some of our female patients, if that's what they really prefer, is to just have a female practitioner. Although for the most part, I mean, at LimLab, we absolutely work as a team, and everybody kind of circles in and out and helps each other out. So we are kind of one whole entity.
Is a woman in your position, and not because you're a woman, but your education, do you get to go to Dr. Andrews' office and meet with the patient in advance?
So we do in some scenarios. We get to go. There's some appointments where we are basically going to what we'd consider amputee clinic, where we're going meeting the patient in the very beginning stage, or they've just come to see their doctor and we're being invited over to kind of help start the process with them. That's some part of what we do. And then there's another part where, you know, they're coming in, obviously, to our office directly. Me being somewhat new at Limb Lab, having only been there for a year, you know, that takes a while to build those relationships. And and kind of be that one going over to the hospital. And so I'm starting to do that and getting to know my way around the medical community of Rochester. Well,
do you run around in a lab duster or whatever you call it? White, you know, the like doctors
oh,
the
coats?
Snock or coats, whatever.
No, we just simply get dirty. I will admit I have an apron that I put on for when I'm doing a lot of real dirty work in the lab to kind of protect my clothes. But we do have some of those coats from when we're doing a lot of our grinding of materials, like carbon fiber, just because it gets real itchy on your skin. So.
Have you reached the point where a potential patient comes in and they meet you and you go in the room and you talk to them and then you actually... take measurements and fit the, and go in and physically make the prostheses, not the very, it seems to me what I'm wearing here, I don't know what you call it, but it seems kind of simple. Well, not the foot part, but the part you put your leg in.
The socket. There's a lot more design in that than yes.
Yeah, but I mean, you can see you know what they're doing. You get it.
You
know,
get it.
Get it. Molding. So do you do then?
I do.
From the beginning all the way to the end?
Absolutely.
Okay. So when did you start doing that after?
That's part of your residency is to start kind of, I mean, you start observing in your residency and little by little it kind of transfers over that you eventually develop your own set of patients that you take on from beginning to end. You have a supervisor that you're touching base with, but then, you know, by the end of that, you're on your own. And so I have my own full patient load that I go through every day. And I still have those, I mean, Brandon, as you know, and Richard Hall, my orthotic advisor, that I still touch base with when I have questions, because, of course, the learning never stops. And I'm, you know, new in the field. Yes, I've been doing it for a few years in some sense, but, yes, I still touch base with them when I have questions, but otherwise I operate on my own through that whole process with the help of our technicians in our lab that are, you know, kind of taking over some of that work, doing the fabricating of it so you can keep seeing patients.
So I was going to ask you whether you were married or had children or anything like that, but you can certainly respond to that if you want to. If not, I don't care.
No children yet.
Yet?
I'm getting married next summer.
Are you?
I am.
Wow, in Minneapolis?
Yep.
Well,
yep.
Good for you.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you.
Are you going to marry a doctor?
Nope. He works in technology, but for a financial institution, so.
Okay. Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
Happy to hear that. We're going to take our final break, and we'll come do a wrap, and I'm not talking music, with our guest this morning, Sarah Amadon.
Santa here, coming to you from the campus of Northfield Retirement Community, where the elves are gearing up for a wonderful holiday season, filled with good food, music, and cheer. And to remind you, the best gifts don't always come down the chimney with me, but are the heartfelt smiles and laughter shared by family, residents, and staff. From our NRC family to yours, we wish you a happy and healthy Merry Christmas. Northfield Retirement Community. Innovation. Choice. Tradition.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
Most jobs take a few steps to complete. What they shouldn't take are a few thousand actual steps roaming through a warehouse to find what you need. Instead, make a quick trip to Aeroways Hardware in Northfield. Our store is the hand-picked quality brands you trust, and we'll make sure you get in and out in no time. Hi, this is Dan from AeroAce, and we're a part of your neighborhood, so you get personal service from the people who know you best. Now through Christmas Eve, round up or donate at AeroAce Hardware to help our local food shelf, the Community Action Center of Northfield.
This is Kim Radio. Listen to this. I hear somebody in the background. Is it Santa and his elves? I don't think so. Do you know what it is? Huh?
Montel Jordan.
Yeah.
This is how we do it.
Yeah. I saved that for last because I just got done asking you what you do down there at Limb Lab. And then I thought, well, then why don't I play This Is How We Do It? Isn't that cute?
Yeah. Very cute.
Well, we're coming up on 11 o'clock on the Wayne Eddy Affair here at the 1 KYMN Radio out of Northfield, Minnesota, 1080 on your AM dial and 95.1, the 1 FM. And we're going to bat a farewell to our guest here. Did I miss anything? That's what I need to know. Did I miss anything?
I don't think so. I think we covered a lot.
Okay. And you're happy with this newer career?
I am. I'm very, yes, I went from one very fulfilling career to another incredibly fulfilling career. I get out of bed in the morning, and I love going to work.
And what about the difference in student loans tuition from biology, micro, whatever, and to this?
I still have quite a hefty bill of student loans, from my newer college experience, second college experience.
Yeah. But you had all those degrees. You can hang them in your office and tell people, hey, I only owe another $500,000, and I'll be free.
I'll be free.
Or put them above your casket.
Yeah.
Because you're never going to get free. Well, hopefully you will.
Hopefully.
Yeah. Well, I really appreciated your coming up here. Pretty simple place to find, wasn't it?
Lovely drive.
Okay. And thank you for the Christmas card.
Yes.
That we got with all of those people that worked there.
Yep.
I like the one with the red hat.
I think a lot of us had red hats.
Oh, was that it? Okay. So good luck to you next year getting married in Minneapolis.
Mm-hmm.
And have the whole family there.
Yep.
And have your brother Aaron there.
Yes.
Is Aaron married?
He was.
He was. Did you have kids?
He does. He has two boys.
So you're an aunt.
I am an aunt. Yep.
Yeah.
I love my nephews.
How old are they?
They are, 13 and 14.
Oh.
Just had a birthday.
Just when they need a good aunt to help them understand mom and dad and why there are restrictions in there.
Oh, yeah.
But you must have had a lot of fun Christmases with them.
I certainly have, yes.
Did you ever have to be away from home for Christmas?
I was, yes. All that time I lived in Hawaii and San Diego, I was away for most holidays. So.
Oh, well, I'm glad you're back.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. It's 11 o'clock. This is, or has been, the Wayne Eddy Affair on KYMN 1080 AM for over 50 years, and now the 95.1 FM from beautiful downtown Northfield, Minnesota. Be back tomorrow morning at 9.
95.1, the 1, revolutionizes radio with a playlist that lasts for days, not minutes.
I love you.